Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're listening to At The Movies. I'm Umar Pagan Ampake Pagan. Now, Grandma Kong has lived all her life in the historic Kampong Haka in Mante, Negeri Sembilan. At 80 years old, she wants to live out her remaining years in the only home she's ever known. But the threat of demolition now looms over the village thanks to a questionable land grab by local officials and a private developer. Her story, along with the plight of the other villagers of Kampong Haka, is the basis of the short film Memory as Resistance. Joining me today to talk about their documentary are filmmakers Chan Seong Fung and Victor Chin, who were recipients of last year's Freedom Film Festival grant, 8,000 ringgit, which went towards the making of this movie. So Seong Fung, Victor, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us about your documentary. But before I begin, I was going to ask you, how did you come across the story of Kampong Haka?
Umar, we have actually been working in this community for 3 years before we actually made this documentary. We were alerted through the social media some brutal eviction was going on. We haul our asses there and made friends, basically, with the community, with the villagers, and subsequently, you know, saw that there was something that we could do together with them to get people to know the situation and to know the village. And so, hence, we started this Facebook group called Rakan Mantin, in which we bring many people from, you know, around the town to come and visit and to know this village, basically.
We were total strangers to this village, which has over 100 years of history. This village, as you know, has got a long history of tin mining, rubber, and then plantation, and now just orchard farming. So these people found us like, "Where are you from, man? How are you here? Are you from the special branch or what?" You know, because there were a lot of very serious and criminal abuse of police and FRU with the developer fighting with the villager who were resisting demolition of their village at that time. That was 4 years back, and that kind of news, when you find it, you say, how can this be happening in Malaysia? How can we do it to Malaysians? What are they trying to do to people like you and I? So we thought this is something we want to see if we could, you know, put our 2 cents worth of whatever we could do. So we just went on a blind date.
Oh, I've jumped ahead of myself. For those people who don't know, where is Kampong Haka?
Well, Kampong Haka is in a small town of Mantin, which is on the old route. If you remember driving in the old times going south, you have to drive through Mantin, through the Mantin Pass to Seremban. So it is between Seremban and KL. It's about, 45 minutes from Kuala Lumpur?
You open your documentary with a very stark scene where you actually show the river, and I'm doing air quotes when I say that, because it's this tiny little stream, and somehow when I have an image of a tin mining town and a river, I see rushing water bringing the tin down to the village. It's a great way to show people actually everything's changed.
Yeah, that river is Sungai Situl. Sungai Situl was a vital vein which brought down tin over 50 million years ago in a geological time scale. And that's why this river at one time, which was a massive river, brought down all the alluvial tin. And that's why people came to excavate tin in that area. As you say, the river now is not even a monsoon drain. It's a kind of a sort of Yeah, it's reduced to its sort of, I don't know what it is. It's almost a drain, a big public drain. Everybody throw everything in now. But the villagers used to tell us that they used to find fish. They used to find all kinds of use for that river. The river was also used to transport tin all the way down to Sungai Langat because it flows north to meet Sungai Langat. So that's a very important, vital geological and also natural geography of the place.
It sits a tin dredge. I don't know if some of you can imagine how big a tin dredge is. Perhaps in this country, apparently there's only one dredge left that serves as some kind of museum in Perak. But if you can go and see how big and how huge that dredge is, you can imagine then how big and how vital this river was to the community.
So in our work, in our, say, promotion of the village, we actually bring people down and roll up their sleeve, their trousers, and get into that little stream and sort of put their hands into the sand and see if they can still find tin. And it's one of the things that Rakan Mantin does, besides making a film. We also have, monthly walks and discovery activities based on the historical and geological feature of that place.
So why a movie? Now, both of you aren't filmmakers. Xiangfeng, you're an activist. Victor, you're a painter. Why use this medium? What brought you to film?
Interesting question.
Because both of you work in powerful mediums as is, being a painter and an activist.
But I didn't go into Rakan Mantin as a painter or an artist. I went in as a activist, trying to promote an issue in the most public way possible, that hoping we can make change to that place, to help those villagers to secure their security and also to safeguard a historical and cultural landscape.
I think it's a natural progression of what we do. In Rakan Mantin, we bring people to see what is barely there. Yeah, it's a way of looking. And making this film is to make people see it in a very specific way as well. So it is part of our work in bringing people to see what is still there or no longer there and to imagine what it had been and what could be.
This is the magic of film, you see. And now it's on YouTube and all over. It's gone to America for sort of Asian study conferences and also other things. So the magic of film is so transportable. Now you turn on the YouTube, it's there. You can look at, listen to this story and feel the empathy with the issue, even if you were in Tokyo or in Brazil or anywhere. So that actually a very powerful medium. And we thought, as Xiangfeng said, we would try it. And then this Freedom Film Festival came about this time last year. At that time, had friends at the Freedom Film Festival saying, hey, why don't you guys make a film about this place? That was how it started.
So before we get into filmmaking, budget, how you went about making it, let's tell people about Kampung Haka. So tell me the story of Kampung Haka and the problem they're facing right now.
The village is a village that grew out of tin mining, which means back in the days, even before the colonial days when they were mining, people lived around near the river. Yeah, so they slowly built and I think at some point the tin mining was a British colonial business, and they have actually allowed the workers of those people who work in this industry to live in this specific area. And slowly it grew into a thriving village, which, as you've seen in the film, it has a school, it has a temple, a 100-over-year-old temple, it has shops, it has all the, it's a big community that live there.
Because the residents there have been living there for 100
years.
Yes,
and they had been given a temporary occupancy license, a TOL license, which they have been paying until the last 10 years or so. And one day somebody told them, oh, you don't have to pay it anymore. Your land belongs to somebody else now. It's been sold.
So our interest in this kampung, which is a very typical case of land grab and illegal and questionable administrative land issue is a typical example of many other towns in Malaysia, and even in Sabah and Sarawak. The same thing happened to, of course, the poor, the weaker, and the underclass of our society. It's a case of a classic case of resistance against the tyranny of power. It's the heart of the film. But the villagers themselves are still struggling to fight this tyranny of power, which is, of course, administrative power, speculative...
economic power.
Power, all those things. And this is still the same old story that we do to people like our Malaysians. What people do to other people is what we want to say in this film. How can this be happening? This is a clear case of human rights violation. That was why film festival encourages to do it as a violation of human rights issue film as well, if you look at it in a bigger picture.
You've got a fantastic subject in your film. The film is focused around Grandma Kong, who is this 80-year-old lady who's lived there her whole life. And, you know, she's such a compelling character. Was it always your idea to tell this oral history focused on this one individual? How did you find her?
Well, we've noticed in the last couple of years that we worked there that people were drawn to her telling, you know, about herself and about her life. And she's just a natural, you know, her stories or her songs. And I thought to myself, wow, she, you know, if we could use her in our film to tell the story to a larger audience and to a, you know, a wider audience, that would be fantastic because that's her talent, you know. So we talked with her and we said we want to make this film, but it will be you talking just about your life. But in a way, it symbolizes the resistance to the demolition that is, you know, impending in the village.
As filmmaking go and first-time filmmaker, we were very lucky to find her. We were very lucky to also gain her trust. And we were very lucky that she's alive, really, to talk to us in that way. She could go tomorrow, by what we know. But it would have been a great opportunity lost if we didn't use her. She is, to me, an angel passing, you would say, in a poetic sense. And we were really impressed by her. She has to do the housework from morning till afternoon, the whole day, because she cooks for 10 people to wash this. So she only have time in the afternoon after she had done all the housework to talk to us. So the filming process is very complicated. We couldn't just bring a film crew in and say, look, we do 2 days shooting. No, we did 3 weeks of shooting just to do that small break that she has after she's done all her chores. She said, I must finish my work first, huh? Then I talk to you. Okay. So we have to wait, and sometimes it's raining. So it took a long time.
Sometimes she was ill. She was also not too well.
We have to work with her within her time that she can talk to us at her free time. This kind of film can only be done when you have... There was no budget to hire a cameraman for 3 weeks. even if it's 500 ringgit a day, it would have blown the budget for 3 weeks. Because we have to hang around for her to be ready to talk. It was that kind of way of filming.
That is the hardest thing about documentary filmmaking, because one, your subjects can be so erratic in the sense that whatever plans you have may go to waste, right? But also, you're outsiders. You're outsiders and people are naturally suspicious of outsiders. So tell me how long it took for you guys to become, well, part of the family. Because the kind of things she shares in the film, you wouldn't tell an outsider.
Yeah, I guess it is what we call intimate access, which we had because we were working with with this community for 3 years already. Before we made this documentary, so she sees us as friends, as even kind of a family, because Victor adopted her as his godmother, a fairy godmother of sorts, and she
adopted you, Victor. Or you adopted her.
It was mutual. I think she in a sense would be my mother. My mother has passed away 10 years ago, and I miss her, my own mother, in a certain way. And when I met her and saw her, it was a very natural thing to just adopt another mother, to continue a sense of belonging to a family.
Victor, were your ancestors originally tin miners as well?
Well, most of the Chinese family that have settled here early were tin miners. That was the only industry, the only slave trade, the only refuge for those violent, turbulent time in China for the Chinese to come here. It was those early desperate economic migrants, you would say, or whatever, political asylum seekers, whatever it is, early ones in the early 19th century and 20th century, were all migrants in the tin mine industry. There was no other industry. So if you go back, my great-great-grandfather would have, say, worked as a kitchen help in a kitchen in a tin mine, or a laundry fella doing laundry for, you know, small stuff, not big taukes of those investors, those venture capitalists from
100 years ago.
But they were really escaping China for just a bowl of rice, because they were devastated by the Japanese war as well, the second batch of people, and also devastated by those Chinese fighting among their own warlords. So it was a despro, really, that has come here, and they all have Chinese tin mine roots, if they want dare to admit it. Of course, some came as so-called wealthy economic migrants, but most of them would have had some Chinese tin mine roots.
So for you, it must have been great insight, walking into Kampung Hakka and getting a glimpse of your own history.
Absolutely right. For me, it was like an opportunity to find who is a Malaysian. And for me, at 67 years old, and looking at my Malaysian roots through this village was a great source of strength, and also a very humbling understanding of how our forefathers came, turned this sort of tropical jungle and with all the tin mine sort of hidden in rocks and rivers, and then cultivated and nurtured it, turned it into a golf course, and now somebody claims it, you know. that to me, it was a very personal discovery of who a Malaysian is now. I know my roots has come from this, and that's why this village and also this landscape, this historical and cultural landscape, has such a significant part to play in the understanding of who a Malaysian is also.
And where we came from.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process now. How you as first-time filmmakers were managing budgets, finding people to hold your cameras, your microphones.
It's a funny story, Uma. It's all buat sendiri. So, well, we had the help of the Komas through the Freedom Film Festival to at least set up a kind of schedule. By this and this, you should have this. By this and this, you should show this. So that helped us focus a bit.
Which we forget to do. It feels so logical and simple, yeah. But we never do that,
yeah.
Right?
So with that, we could only afford two crew, which is Victor and myself, you know, unpaid, and traveling down to Mantin every day or every other day to get the job done.
Komas, for the last 13 years, we must give them credit for encouraging filmmakers, first time or otherwise, to make films with, it's got a political and social message in its nature.
But I think what is important also is what drives us. I think it was made very clear from the beginning, from our pitching, that it's not just any story. You have to make a good documentary. Just don't make, you know, just because you have a story to make any old documentary. And that was kind of at the back of my mind. Oh dear, a good documentary. So we watch documentary, and somehow we know what is good and what doesn't work and what's not good.
And that's important. I mean, that's where you start. We all start by copying the greats, and we watch journalistic documentaries, and we know what works and we know what we like, mm-hmm. and we try to emulate that methodology, I suppose. I'm curious about the people of Kampung Hakka now. You've got some scenes in the middle of the documentary where you start talking about what's happening now, the demolition of houses, the kind of police action that has been taking place because of the developers that really want to force people out. It's been, what, 6-7 months since your documentary first was released. What's going on with Grandma Kong and the people of Kampung Haka right now?
Grandma Kong is well. She's just got another great-grandchild. The family continues in its life and in its livelihood. And the villagers that remain and who are resisting this demolition are still there. And they are determined that, you know, to, of course, and the developer is at their doorsteps. You know, they are always hounding them with one thing or the other. And lately, they have made it that those who have so-called taken some form of compensation destroy their own house. It's a way of breaking up
the village.
The village. And hence, there are a couple of houses that has been destroyed by the owners themselves because they have taken some money from the developer. What we would like to do and we continue to do is to build over it and continue to have this sense of confidence that we can resist for as long as we need to.
Have you been able, over the last few months, to measure any sort of impact of the film? Because I guess it's the wonder of the internet and YouTube, right? It's magical. It gets everywhere now. Have you seen an increase in people who are showing interest?
I don't want to play this number game about viral and blah, 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 blah. I think the film, since it's been released, which is about 4 weeks ago, the English version, which Komas set up, is about 700 viewers. The Chinese version, which we just put out ourselves, is about 300 viewers. I think numbers is not what we're after. I think people who see it, like you were moved by it to want to then talk to us. I think that's more important. You're moved by it, you're empathetic with it, come and visit them.
No, but you're right. Oh, you don't need 100,000 viewers. No. If you have 700 passionate people who will come and help you, that's all you need.
One person, not 100,000, one person coming to say, hey, can we help you with something? Let's make another film. Because there's so many stories in that village. It's a treasure trove for film set to whatever it is. But don't turn it into a Walt Disney sort of film set. These are living people. They're not, you know, they don't come in at 3 o'clock and do a cooking session like they do in Disneyland.
I've been speaking to Victor Chin and Chan Seong Fung. You can watch their film Memory as Resistance online at freedomfilmfest.comas.org. If you have a film or an idea for a film, you too can take part in this year's Freedom Film Festival. Just make your way to their website for more information. The deadline for film submissions and grant proposal submissions is August the 1st, so you've got lots of time. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.